Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Thanks for being with us. We have a full show today. Seth Joyner, I always have a full show, but today just stacked up with guests. Seth Joyner is, I think he's back in the Valley. Seth's doing some work with FS1. Seth was the original NFL Network analyst, and there's always things going on in the, not just in football. Seth's better than that. Guys that can only just talk one thing. I mean, come on, you're well-rounded, and Seth can do that. So we'll get into a bunch of things with Seth Joyner outside of just football. I'm very curious Seth's take on the Warriors and not going to see President Trump. And those of you who don't like politics and sports, wrong show. Sorry. There's a lot going on out there. So, yeah, today's one of those days where there's things that are just beyond X's and O's that I want to get into. Patrice Carteron is going to be with us today. Patrice Carteron is a name that you need to know. You may not know because Phoenix Rising FC has been, the focus has been on the field, right? Didier Drogba comes in and you get worldwide headlines. But beneath the surface on last Saturday night, it was Patrice's debut as the manager, coach, manager of Rising FC. And they won. What is his background? What is he all about coming here? It's not that I'm not interested in the players and all that, but to not have any attention really focused on the new manager, to me, is just kind of crazy here in town. Like, come on. This is not that hard. So we're going to have him on via Skype over at Phoenix Rising FC. And then we'll have Good Eat the Movies, because you need to have a life outside of sports. What else is going on out there? Bill Gidekunst, chief film critic for Gannett and AZ Central. Goody at the Movies. That is all coming up on today's show. I'm supposed to have Mike Tyson next week, and I've been reading through the excerpts of his book, and I'm looking forward to that interview on one hand. On another hand, I have to tell you, it could go really bad, because I've got a couple of Mike Tyson stories of things that he and I were a part of through the years. I've got to sprinkle in. So I've been putting in a lot of time on that. I'm working on a couple projects outside of what you see here every day, and we'll have some news on that, I do believe, here in the next few weeks. So some things that are going on, they're really cool. Nothing that's going to impact what's going on here, but just things that I think are really cool. The Diamondbacks last night won again. I feel like I'm in a recording mode where every day I come in here and every day I'm saying things like they won again. Four straight. They beat Detroit on the road. The significant story here was Taijuan Walker comes back into the starting rotation. Taijuan Walker had been out. Taijuan Walker had been away. And Taijuan Walker was very effective last night. One run, six hits, 82 pitches. I think we have some pictures of Taijuan Walker. So why don't we put them up? There you go. One run, six hits, 82 pitches. Taijuan Walker was very efficient last night for the Diamondbacks. They had a two-run first inning, and they would go on to the victory. After Walker was done with his night, they brought in Randall Delgado. They brought in Fernando Rodney. So I got to sit here and do kind of a mea culpa on Fernando Rodney. Like many of you, but I'll take it on just my own shoulders, I sat here at the end of the season, end of April, first part of May, and I was sitting right here on this camera saying, what is going on here? This guy can't get it done. This is gut-wrenching. This is heartbreaking. They've been off to a great start. You have to give credit where credit is due. Closers are going to blow games. I got that, but it was too early in the year to see these complete road bumps, complete potholes, games being blown, opportunities in the standings. 18th save and 21 chances for Rodney last night. So, guys, if we're sitting here, as we're sitting here today, the middle of June, through 67 games, this team has accomplished something that only one other team in the history of the franchise has done. They have matched the best start in the history of the franchise with last night's win. 41-26, the Diamondbacks have never been here before other than one time, and that's it. So 41-26. And, you know, they've got Philadelphia this weekend. Philadelphia, I don't think, is a great ball club. They're fine. They're good. They're building and all that. I don't think they're great. But I'm looking ahead to next week when they're at Colorado. The Diamondbacks have six games against the Rockies in the next 2 weeks. Colorado is right there with the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. And we have not talked about Mike Hazen much at all, the general manager of the Diamondbacks. But I do believe that in the next 2 weeks, it's going to be time to see some moves on this team if some things don't change. The example is Patrick Corbin. Every team has a spot that you look at. And I could be wrong on Patrick Corbin like I was wrong on Fernando Rodney. But I don't think I was alone when Fernando Rodney was blowing games and coming out with the gas can and the lighter rather than his bow and arrow. So if Patrick Corbin goes to the mound tomorrow night in Philadelphia, he's supposed to pitch, and he's the nibbler, and he's trying to nibble inside, nibble outside, and nothing good is happening. And you get the 5 1/3, you get the 4 1/3, you get the tough stat line that he's had this year. At some point, Hazen's got to look at this and say, that is our weak spot on the team. If you were to go around the team, you have a potential all-star at third base. You have for sure all-star at first base. You have for sure all-star that is out there on the mound from the right side. You have a kind of sort of maybe down the road all-star from the left side in Robbie Ray. Kind of sort of maybe, all right? I'm being kind on that one. That's four guys. And there'd be some that would say, well, 18 of 21 saves, you should look at the closer. I'm not going to go there because there's lots of closers. So, but every team does have that weak spot. They're winning games without A.J. Pollock. They're winning games without Yasmani Tomas. Maybe some players on this roster that have filled in for them are starting to come of age. And you could look at it and say, do we have some depth here? I'm not suggesting that they make a move. I'm just saying that that could be the case. So it's really interesting what's going on with the baseball team. I don't know if you saw this story. The Diamondbacks and every other team in Major League Baseball on August 25th through the 27th are going to be allowed to wear nicknames on the back, inspirational patches on their uniforms, personalize their uniforms. They'll be able to wear colorful shoes. Jordan, I don't even know, if you have a schedule there in front of you, I should have looked this up. If the Diamondbacks are home or if they're away, it's August 25th through the 27th. This is one of these deals that had to be negotiated between the league and the Major League Baseball Players Association. So players have wanted to highlight their more personal flavor from a fashion perspective. At least that's how it's being spun today. No, this is being spun of, you can get shoe deals.
They will be home against the Giants.
All right, so a home weekend series where players can do anything. I shouldn't say anything. They can do things to their uniform. You've seen this story, right?
Yes. While it's appropriate, they can make alterations. They can have the nicknames on the back, a la XFL from a few.
He hate me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So you may see a mad bum on the Giants. You might see,
I don't care about the Giants.
Yeah.
I don't care. What do you put on A.J. Pollock? A.J.?
The thing is, I don't know how many of those guys would take advantage. It seems like you might have a Goldie for Goldschmidt, but
is he like that?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Maybe there might just be like a lamb photo on the back, like a little lamb emoji for Jake.
Okay, that's kind of cool, I would think. You nerd out on this stuff, so I mean, you could have fun with this.
Yeah, get a little creative.
No, that's fine. If it's Rodney, do you put a bow and arrow?
A train for Peralta.
Or put
freight or something like that.
Okay, so guys that are older are going to hate this. This is base because they're going to say these guys are making it too much about themselves. Like when I go out to club basketball and I see these nicknames on the backs of kids' jerseys that say indefensible, undeniable, the next one, the show. I mean, all this stuff, not club teams, but players. And they have all that stuff. I'm just like, you've got to be bleeping kidding me. Oh, it's so cute. No,
and
it's not.
They're 12? Is that?
12, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's not cute. No, it's not. You're teaching individualism. You're not teaching team. That's just the way it is. Is that old school? No. It's like when I was in a club basketball meeting at the start of this year. It's a packed gym, a couple hundred parents. Somebody raises their hand. When are we getting our gear? There is no gear. It was beautiful.
They want their swag, Brad.
There's the door. Get out. You know? What are you talking about, your gear? Just enough.
Shooter sleeves. That makes the ball player.
Oh, sure it does. So after the weekend, the jerseys are going to be sold by MLB, and the proceeds will be donated to a youth development foundation. Now, this isn't just MLB saying, hey, this will be really fun. This will be really cool. No, there's a business side here. Let's just cut through it. So what is the advantage for MLB? What is it that they're trying to do? Are they trying to get younger? Are they trying to get you because you're a younger gentleman who loves baseball, right? Are they trying to get a younger demographic?
This is all accurate, yes.
Yes, of course it is. It's like Topgolf showing up for golf. They got to get younger. They can't have 68-year-olds watching the John Deere Classic and nobody cares. You know, so sports are just trying. So this is baseball's way of trying to get younger. There is discussion of potentially using home run derby bat rules, meaning players could alternate designs and colors. So what does that mean? Does it mean different types of bats? I'm going to bring out my corked one today. So there's a lot of individualism being preached here by MLB. Is that guys wanting to go do their own Lonzo Ball, LeVar Ball type of shoe deal? Of course it is. So I don't know. I'm amused by this stuff that is tried to be put off as, oh, this is really neat and noble and fun. No, it's not. This is a business deal. The Suns, so they trade. Will they trade? Your mic's still on, by the way. Will they trade number 4 to Sacramento for number 5 and number 10? The Suns reportedly yesterday have started to entertain trading down from 4 to 5 and 10. And I would do this deal. This is because Sacramento wants De'Aaron Fox. I would do this deal. I think that there, and I'm going to talk about this later, several names that you could bring up in the course of this conversation. Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor fight. Some people really like it. Some people think it's a complete waste of time. Some people think it's something to do in the middle of summer. Some people think Conor McGregor's not even going to be able to land one punch on Floyd Mayweather. It's a money grab. Real simple. We don't need to do a whole segment on that. The worst news of the day yesterday for Phoenix fans was Jerry West was hired by the Clippers. Jerry West is easily the best front office executive in the history of the NBA. Yes, I said the best in the history of the NBA. You can go back and find a bad deal. Yeah, you can. Red Auerbach's not with us anymore. Jerry is. Jerry's really good. He left the Warriors this week, said, I've done enough here in Golden State. I'm going to go fix the Clippers. If you're going to go fix the Clippers, that was a team that was descending. And the Suns are trying to get up there. So this was not good news. It's not good news. You can sit there and say, well, Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. No, this is Jerry freaking West. That's it. Seth Joyner is next. And then we're going to have Patrice Carteron with us a little bit later on, the new head coach, Phoenix Rising, and Bill Goodykoons. It's Good Thursday. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now we're joined by former NFL star linebacker Seth Joyner, the original, as I like to call him, because he was the first NFL Network analyst and a man of many talents, not just a football guy, which I really like about him. Are you doing some work with Fox Sports 1? Am I hearing this correctly? What's going on there?
Well, you know, I went on the Speak for Yourself show last week. Jason Whitlock invited me on. And they invited me back this week. So we're trying to work through some things, trying to figure out how we can make it happen because I've got, you know, still got my responsibilities in Philadelphia with radio and TV during the football season. So just, you know, trying to figure out how to make it all work. And, you know, it's going to be a busy fall and winter for me this year.
Look at you. Look at you. This is good news, yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you know, right. it could be – nothing, you know, it could be worse not having anybody interested in you and not having anything to do. But, you know, I've definitely been blessed, you know, with a couple opportunities here. And I'm looking forward to expanding my brand, as they would say.
Yeah, well, I've always known it. And you always have a place. If nobody else loves you, I do. So how's that for an answer? all right. Let's go through some news stuff then, because I think this is right into your wheelhouse. So the Warriors win, and they are debating about whether or not they're going to go to the White House and shake President Trump's hand. And I'm of the opinion that you should always go, and you can make a stance, a much more powerful stance, in saying, well, I'm just not going to go. People have already done the I'm not going to go. Having Steph Curry at a hot microphone or Steve Kerr at a hot microphone could very well make change happen. What do you think on this one with the Warriors?
I know how coaches think, how organizations think. They hate for things to be fragmented. So if you put it in motion to go, and then you've got, what, 13, 15 guys on your roster, you put it in motion to go and only three or four guys show up, now you've got a problem. You know, so I understand, you know, why they're doing it, how they're doing it. I don't know. You know, this whole protest and social change thing and let's not go or should we go, you know, so our voice can be heard. I think those guys are always going to have a platform to say what it is that they want to say.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something that they don't, you know, agree with as far as Donald Trump is concerned, I mean, I guess it's their constitutional right, you know, and their personal right not to go, not to partake in that. But I don't know. You know, we were talking about, you know, racism and change yesterday. And, you know, I'm just of the belief that, you know, I'm tired of the dialogue.
You
know, we've been dialoguing for, yes, you know, 75, 80 years. You know, when are we going to bring about some change? What can we do that really affects change? And you have to ask yourself, you know, are them not going to the White House, is that going to affect any change? And then you have to ask yourself the same question at the other end of the spectrum. If they go,
yes,
will it affect change? Or are we just creating another dialogue?
And this isn't black versus white, right? I mean, when you say they, it's not.
No, not at all.
Yeah. We're not talking about just people of color that are going to go. We're talking about if you're standing there with Donald Trump and you take the microphone and say, thank you, Mr. President, for having us here. We respectfully disagree with several of your positions. He's not going to grab the mic from you. You can actually be an agent of change right there, right?
Well, I get that. I mean, you know, but who's brash enough in that setting to really, you know, take it there? That within itself, you know, I might see Draymond Green doing it,
mm-hmm,
you know, but it's kind of, you know, because you're there for a celebration, it's kind of the inappropriate place and the inappropriate time, you know, to actually address something of that nature.
But maybe you need to be inappropriate. Maybe you need to do something that nobody is expecting in a thoughtful way. I think Steve Kerr could do that, given his backstory. Right? I mean, I've talked to Steve Kerr enough, knowing everything that guy has been through with his dad and his stance and his dad being murdered and everything that's gone on there with Steve. I think Steve Kerr is somebody who could do that.
Well, probably. I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, I think the era of politically correctness, you know, has gotten us into the quagmire that we're in right now.
Agreed.
You're 100% correct. Maybe we need to step outside the box and do some things differently. But, you know, we talked about it yesterday, about guys stepping up for social change and, you know, how it affects their brand and how it affects their careers and their earning potential and things of that nature. And a lot of guys are very cautious about doing it, you know, and particularly, you know, we talked about, you know, Kaepernick,
mm-hmm,
and I was, you know, he had to weigh the cost of what the price is going to be for doing what he did. I don't think that the magnitude of it, he could have ever envisioned that.
None of us could. I don't think, Seth.
No, but then again, Brad, I think what happened with him is that the message and the method got crossed up. The method was wrong, kneeling during the national anthem, but the message was correct. And most people chose to focus on the method rather than the message.
Mm-hmm. No, I would agree with you. It's well put. Talk about Seth Joyner, and it's always good to have Seth on board with us doing some. Can I say you're doing work with FS1, or am I overreaching here? You're just hanging out with FS1.
Well, I'm hanging out with him right now.
All right, so he's hanging. He's flirting.
Not official.
He's flirting with FS1. How's that for an answer? We all like to flirt, play footsie. If we're just talking on the field and we're sitting here in the middle of summer with training camps 6-5 weeks away from now, who do you really like this year in the NFC, Seth?
Well, let me preface your question,
yeah,
with the fact that New England is going to win the Super Bowl again.
So it doesn't matter.
If I was a betting man, I'd go to Las Vegas today and put $5,000 down on them. And whatever the odds are, that's what they are. But they're going to win the Super Bowl again. Barring, you know, a Tom Brady injury or something of that nature, they're going to repeat. As far as the NFC is concerned, that's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of teams that have made a lot of improvement, you know, on one side of the ball or the other. Like I look at the Saints with Adrian Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, if they can get their running game going with him and Mark Ingram, Drew Brees might throw for 6,000 yards. I mean, he might break the all-time record and throw for over 50 touchdowns. I mean, he might just light it completely up. And Adrian Peterson is on a mission. Everyone's written him off, and I think he's on a mission to prove that even at 32, that he still is the most dominant back in football. Tampa Bay and all the things that they did to improve their offense and the weapons through the draft and free agency that they gave
Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston.
Jameis Winston.
Yeah, that's
like,
fine.
I forget that name.
That's fine.
So, you know, they have to put the potential offensively to be a juggernaut. But can they make the improvements on the defensive side of the ball? Same thing with the Saints. You know, can they make those improvements to enough that carries them into the playoffs where they can make some noise? Because you can be, I mean, Dallas proved it last year. You can be a potent offense and a so-so defense, and the offense can carry you through the season. But when you get into the postseason, now you've got the best of the best defenses with the best of the best defensive coordinators, and they will take away the things that you do best and make you beat them with the things that you do the least best. So you can't hide, you can't mask it once you get into the postseason. So I mean, who are those teams? I think Seattle will bounce back. I look for Carolina to bounce back. I still don't know whether they have enough on both sides of the ball to get back to where they were, but I do look for them, you know, as a team to bounce back.
Talking with Seth Joyner. Go ahead. Talking with Seth Joyner as we go through things going on in the National Football League in the middle of summer. Where are the Arizona Cardinals, from your view, in the NFC? Descending, ascending? Big question marks everywhere, or, you know, Carson still has gas left. Larry still has gas left. The loss of Calais, not that big of a deal. They've done better in their drafts. Kimdiche will come through. Where are you at on the Cardinals, Seth?
Well, I think that if Kimdiche can learn to be a pro, according to what Bruce Arians wants him to be, I think that he can be a nightmare for a lot of teams, because I just think he's just that gifted. He's just young in the mind. Defensively, they're going to get the Honey Badger back 100% full strength, so that automatically makes them better than where they were last year. You know, the young corner on the other side, you know, if they choose to go with him again, he got invaluable experience last year. You know, offensively, the emergence of you know, David at running back, I mean, he's just a phenomenal talent. And I think that he's going to be featured in even greater ways as the, you know, this year coming up. You know, Larry's going to do what Larry does, because he's always going to keep himself in shape. You know, they're still powerful at the wide receiver position with plenty of depth. You know, my question has always been, Brad, you know, we talked about this last year, is Carson Palmer. Can he take the next step psychologically? Can he take the next step from the perspective of, you know, pressure, because teams know that he doesn't handle pressure particularly well? Can he take the next step that allows this team to get over the hump and do what it wants to do, you know, come postseason? You know, James Betcher is going to have Honey Badger back, which gives him so much flexibility to do so many different things that he probably was handicapped with last year with a rookie cornerback, and not having that versatile piece on the chessboard that you can move all over the place and do so many things with. So I expect for the defense to be, you know, much better than they were last year.
One other question on the Cardinals, and that is, let's go back to David Johnson. How much tread off the tire do you think he already has of workload, and do you concern yourself with that at all? Do they have to find somebody to just do a little bit of something like they had with Chris Johnson a couple of years ago or other running backs. I'm just worried about workload and hits on this guy.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, the good thing about him, what I really like about him is he's one of those rare running backs that you ever really get a solid hit on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only time he takes solid blows is when he's, you know, in short yards and goal line situations. And those aren't that plentiful, you know, for this offense, the way they're able to move the ball and convert on third down passing the football. So the other good thing is that, you know, Brad, he's young.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you're young, the first four or five, maybe 6 years of your career, you know, you can get away with a heavy workload. You know, once you get past those years, you know, coaches really need to think about, you know, how do you preserve him a little bit, you know. And now is the time, you know, most teams, you know, have like a stable of running backs. You know, they got guys that do different things. Luckily for them, they've got a generational running back. And by generational, you know, I call these generational running backs guys who run the ball effectively, who block, and who can come out of the backfield and catch balls, be a great receiver out in space. But most teams, they'll have three or four guys that do certain things well, and then they get inserted in certain situations. The luxury that Bruce has with David Johnson is that, you know, he's in the game all the time. He can do those things all the time. So you can get in a third down set in, on first and second down, isolate, you know, a linebacker on him, and he's going to win that battle nine out of 10 times. But now is the time, I would say, to try to find that guy that can spare him maybe 10 touches a game.
Yeah.
Because his touches are off the chart. I mean, he's carrying the ball 20-plus times. He's received catching the ball another, you know, 5 to 10 times. I mean, 30 touches, 35 touches a game. That's a lot of touches for, you know, a running back.
That's my concern. Hey, good stuff as always. Appreciate the time. Best of luck. Thanks.
Anytime, Brad. Take care.
Seth Joyner with us. Good to always catch up with Seth. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. On the other side, Patrice Cutteron, the new manager of Phoenix Rising FC. Really interesting guy, and his debut was last week. Everybody's focused on Drogba. I'm focused on the new man in charge on the sideline as they work towards MLS. That's next. So a lot of buzz in the air about what is going on with Rising FC. We've been talking about it through, well, actually the last 4 years here on Sports 360 AZ as the team has continued to evolve. And now with stable leadership in place, the arrival of players that are known worldwide in Wright Phillips and in Drogba, the announcement that there was a change of coach and manager, and Patrice Cutteron is the person who came on board with Rising FC. And Patrice, the other night, everybody was focused on Didier Drogba and his debut, and rightly so, but it was also the debut of the new manager. And he joins us now via Skype over at Rising FC's headquarters in Scottsdale. Patrice, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I appreciate you joining us. Tell us about your journey that brought you to Phoenix and how it came to be.
To be honest with you, at first I just came to visit Phoenix to spend some few days of holidays and to visit Didier that I know for a long time right now. I'm talking about Didier Drogba. And finally, I had a meeting with the board, and we had all of us had a very good feeling. So we had another meeting, and finally they did convince me to come and join Phoenix Rising as a head coach.
So Didier was the one that initiated the process to get you to be coaching here.
He just organized a meeting, you know. As you know, he's a part of the board member, so he just wanted me to be introduced. After this, we had, as I said, some meeting with all the board members, and they just decided if I was the man who can help them to grow up.
When you went into that meeting, what was it at any point in time that made you think, tilt your head to the side and say, you know, this may be a good fit? What was it that attracted you to coming here?
100% my feeling. I was really proud and very happy to meet such optimistic people from the board members. They are they have a lot of ambition for Phoenix. They have a lot of ambition for Phoenix Rising, and really, I was impressed by their motivation. So I said to myself, come on, it's going to be a fantastic challenge. And I had, it's only my feeling who decided me to stay there.
Mm. In the opening press release, Berke Bakay said his holistic, speaking about you, his quote was, his holistic approach to the game combines a unique strategy that involves wellness. And I'm just curious, I've had fans that have asked me about that quote. What is the holistic approach? What is Berke talking about there that you bring?
Different things. You know, I had the chance wherever I went by the past. I still consider myself as a young coach. I'm only 47 years old, so I'm coach for now 10 years. But I had the chance to succeed quite everywhere I went by the past. But I think I had some psychological diploma when I was studying, so I think it's helpful for me. You know, you have to deal with football player, but you have also to deal with the men, and I have the chance most of the times that the pressure, the player do appreciate me as a man, also as a coach, and also my philosophy is that I want to work to do everything with the ball, because the more important for me is the pleasure. If you have every day the pleasure at the training to work with a lot of intensity, then I'm sure that you will give your best the day of the game. And after the only words I want my player to remember is, and the more important thing for us, the three more important things, like I used to repeat, is one, the result, two, the result, and three, the result, because it's so important. And part of the thing I want to change sometimes is, you know, the attitude of our players. Sometimes they don't realize how every game is important. That's right. From the start of this season, I've been watching most of our game. I have the feeling that they are really reacting really well, but sometimes they have to act before reacting. You know, one game we win, the game after we lose. I really want us to be more performant in the next week.
Mm. I heard a story that you like to stretch your players yourself, and you speak to them while you're stretching to them. Tell me about that.
You know, that's part of the thing. I want the player to understand that the staff is giving his best. And sometimes when to spend time with one of your players, spend time by stretching him, it's, you know, sometimes you don't need to talk. He feels that you really want to give your best, your best for him to improve and for him to progress. And in those moments, you can also have a good talk with him. So, yes, that's part of the thing I like to do and to deal with my player.
If you're stretching a player like Drogba versus stretching a player who is not part of your starting unit, how different is that conversation? Because I'm sure that you're trying to encourage all of your players. But if it's a younger player that you're trying to bring along, how different is that conversation versus a star player?
To give you an example, I know that most of my colleagues as a coach don't take care of the substitute player, for example, the day after the game. The day after the game, I want to take care of those players because I want them to feel that at a moment or another, they will have their chance. But that's why most of the time I want to take care of them, and I'm the responsible of the training of the players that didn't play the day before, for example.
So when you have a veteran player who's been through the wars, through the years, and through the grind of a season, versus a young player who may be coming along, cognitively, I'm sure you're thinking, this young man has only been at it a year. I've got to treat him differently and motivate him differently than the Drogbas or the Sean Wright Phillips.
Of course, because the young player, of course, needs to work more because they need to progress. So it's a different kind of, as you just said, it's not, I won't learn to Drogba or to Sean Wright Phillips or Omar Bravo how to score goals, if you see what I mean.
Sure.
I just do my best for them to be physically ready, for them to keep as much as energy possible to be ready for the game. But the young players, they need more advices, they need more times, they need more advices, as I just said. So it's a different way of managing.
What is your approach to a star player?
you have to be close from them, and you have to talk a lot with them also, because most of the time those players will give you a lot of answer. Mm-hmm. They will give you a lot of answer, but you have to listen to them. You have to tell them if everything is okay every day. What do you need to be performant? And most of the time they are responsible and they know how to prepare themselves. So I just try to be as to take care of them as best as I can.
If we were to go back the other night on the first match, did you have some butterflies, emotions walking onto the pitch, or was it, this is what I do and I'm here to get the job done? What were your emotions the other night like?
At first, I really wanted our player to give the best for our fans, to be proud of them. I really want us every game we're going to play home. I know that sometime, because of the trip, it will be difficult. Sometimes the game away are not depending on the atmosphere, not that easy. But like I told them, if you want 7,000 people to come every time we're gonna play home, we have to give our best, no matter the final result. But I really want the fans to feel that you will fight for them for 90 minutes. So please, give the best of yourself, and I'm sure that if you give the best of yourself, we will have a fantastic result.
What did you think of the atmosphere the other night? It was your first time coaching here. What did you think?
I like the atmosphere in Phoenix first, because I'm really impressed how friendly and smart are the people here, really, and how fun at the moment. I was there for the game against Oklahoma City, watching the game, and I really said to myself, okay, I think I will accept, because the proposition, because the atmosphere is fantastic in the stadium. People are giving their best. We had some difficult moments in the game, but they were still pushing our player to give the best. And thank you for this. In that kind of situation, you really want to give the best of yourself. Is what I'm trying to do myself also.
Joined by Patrice Carteron, the manager of Rising FC. Their next home match is Saturday, June 23rd against Real Monarchs. And there are tickets available for that this Sunday. They're at the road at Swope Park. Take me back on your background of soccer. You've been in Mali with the men's national team, Europe, yeah. Africa. I can read all about that stuff. I'd rather hear from you your journey of soccer. When did it first start to become a sport that you preferred?
Before this, you know, for 15 years, I used to be professional in France and England, and then after. When I decided to become a coach, I had the chance to be in a very good third division team in France immediately. We finished at a fantastic place with young players, and the second division team, professional team, asked me to become the head coach. I was young at this moment, and this team was the smallest budget in the second division in France. And we made a fantastic things happening, because we reached the first division. We were the favorite for relegation, and finally we went in first division. So in France, after 1 year in first division in France, in the first league, I had some opportunity to have some other experiences, and I became coach of Mali national team. It was amazing, because we had Africa Cup of Nations in South Africa in 2013, and we reached the third place, and I was so proud about it. And then after, I went to Congo and stayed there for 2 years and a half, and became won the Champions League with TP Mazembe, a Congolese team. We were the only black African team fighting against seven Arabic teams, and we won the trophy of Champions League. I was really proud about it. And then after, I went in Egypt. I wanted to have an experience in an Arabic country also. I went to Egypt and in a team fighting for relegation, and we reached a fantastic fifth place. And last year I was in Saudi Arabia, and we in a good club, Al Nasser club, who had a very difficult season by the past, and this time we went back to Champions League by finishing at the third place. So as I said a few minutes ago, I really think that God loves me, because I have a very good result wherever I go. So I hope we will do the same in Phoenix Rising.
Yeah. Is there a country you have not coached in, Patrice?
But at the moment, I'm really proud to be there in United States. As I just said, people are, the atmosphere is fantastic. I have really the chance the board members are all of them. You are talking about Tim Rüssler, you were talking about Berke. They are amazing day after day. They are, as I just said, they are so optimistic. They are so ambitious for this club, and I'm really proud to be part of it.
Who impacted your coaching style? Who molded you to be a manager? Who are the people you would credit?
When I was younger, you know, when I did study to become a coach, I spent a lot of time in Chelsea, for example, with Mourinho, Villas-Boas, and I'm definitely part of the Portuguese spirit of the moment with a lot of psychological aspect and everything with the ball. You know, we do every training session with a lot of intensity, but with the ball, I'm part, I think, of that. This is the way I like to coach my team.
It's very good. What do you think of Phoenix so far? How do you like not just coaching on game night, just living in Phoenix?
I love it. I'm so happy to be in a sunny place right now. I can hear that some of you are complaining that it's getting warm at the moment, but please don't. You have the chance to be in a fantastic town to live in. And I really do appreciate the place, and I'm happy to be here.
118 degrees coming up, Coach. How do you coach through that with your players?
Maybe we're going to train a little bit earlier in the morning just for the player to be able to train normally. That's the only difference, in my opinion.
Well, I really appreciate the visit. Welcome, and I look forward to covering you in the future and seeing you down the road. Thank you, Coach.
My pleasure.
Very
Take
nice.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Patrice Carteron, he is the manager of Rising FC, joining us via Skype. All the attention on Drogba, Sean Wright Phillips, Bravo, all the players, it's fine, but you've got to have somebody along the way, and appreciate the coach joining us via Skype. Sports360AZ.com, we partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports, our television show on Fox Sports Arizona, Brad Sussmat Football AZ. We should do a soccer show. We really should. 60 airings per month on Fox Sports AZ. We're back with more after this timeout. And now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, it is time to get out to the movies. Goody at the movies. It is Bill Goody from Credit Corp Gannett and AZ Central. How are you, Bill?
I'm good.
Yeah? You talked to Sam Elliott this week, huh?
I did.
Wow. Sam Elliott's one of these guys that has had how many years has he been doing movies? Like 50? Long time.
Yeah, he did TV for a long time. Did some, you know, it's just like all these guys, you look at their credits and they're these, you know, these old shows that you kind of heard of and you're like, wow, I didn't know he was in that. And of course you wouldn't because it was a, you know, really small role. And he was in Mission Impossible for a while, but he's just one of those guys that like, was fun to talk to, because, in part because of that voice.
Yeah. As soon as you hear the voice, you know. You don't need anybody to tell you who it is, right?
No. I said, do you do anything to it? Do you, like, protect it or anything? He said, no.
Scotch. Lots of scotch. Lots of cigars.
Yeah, probably.
Is this movie any good, The Hero, with Sam Elliott?
It's really interesting, and he's good. He's better than the movie is, and the premise is better than the movie is. It's basically a version of him. It's about this guy, and it actually starts with his character, who is a kind of a cowboy actor, who says he hasn't done any work he's proud of in the last 40 years. I don't think that's true with him, but he's kind of known for this one role in a movie called The Hero 40 years ago. But he's doing a barbecue sauce commercial for the radio station when the movie starts, which is, of course, much like his beef, it's what's for dinner, you know, voiceovers. And something happens to the guy, and I don't want to give too much away, but he's estranged from his daughter. He's divorced from his wife. He is his real-life wife, who he's not divorced from, Catherine Ross. And he gets this award, like this Lifetime Achievement Award, kind of a rinky-dink little outfit gives it to him. But his speech goes viral, and his life changes, and, you know, stuff like that. But it's the most interesting part is just, like, the idea of these people that are kind of like, they're famous and you sort of know who they are, but sometimes you can't quite place it. But you know, they can live off of it, but they're never going to be that famous again. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sure. No, I think that's part of anybody in this profession or in that profession. Sure. I think that happens all the time.
Sure. I mean, it happens with athletes. It happens with, you know, Wait, what is the movie? The Robert Duvall. He won an Oscar for it, Tender Mercies. Is it Tender Mercies where he says he plays a singer, country singer named Matt Sledge, and a woman comes up to him and says, "Didn't you used to be Matt Sledge?" And he says, "Yes, ma'am, I did."
Yes, I did. So this is worth seeing. This is good.
Oh, yeah, I think so, if you like Elliot. I mean, it's not the problem. The movie around him is not as good, mm-hmm. but and there's some what should be some really good supporting characters, but they just kind of let them. It's all built around him, and it'd be good for him because he finally gets a leading role.
All right.
You know, you're used to him. The thing that I'd forgotten this, everybody when they talk about the Big Lebowski runs around and says the dude abides. You know, they're talking about Jeff Bridges. Sam Elliott is the guy who says the dude abides.
Okay.
He's the one who has that line.
Book of Henry looks awful.
It is awful. They try to trick it up. It's one of those movies. There's this kind of thing that you see sometimes where something could be kind of like fake good. It seems to have all the stuff, and if you're there just sort of halfway paying attention, I don't know what else to say. If you're sort of too easily pleased, it's like, ooh, this is great. This is really good. And this tries to do that. It tries to trick you into thinking it's good. Some movies don't even try. I mean, you know, some movies are just, you know, they're what they are. This one tries, and it's got these ridiculous plot twists, and I'm not saying anything about that. But it made me mad because it's about this boy genius kid who is convinced, and probably rightly so, that the neighbor next door is, like, physically abusing his daughter, and he's friends with the daughter. And he sets up this elaborate scheme to, you know, get the guy. And, you know, all fine, all well and good. There's a huge plot twist in the middle of it that affects the rest of the film. And it's and I'll give them this. It's not, you could sit here and guess for 10 years and you would not guess it. That is not necessarily a good thing. but by the end of it, it's like there's some really good people, some really good actors. And it's like, man, you are completely trying to manipulate me here. You are trying to make me cry. And all you're really doing is making me mad.
Yeah.
Some of these movies that, like, try to make you cry, they're good at it. A movie like The Fault in Our Stars, it is like a tear delivery vehicle. I mean, that's why that movie exists. And it worked on me. I mean, I was sitting there next to it. I was at one of those screenings where it was just me and a publicist. And I was sitting there beside him, and I was like, I will not cry. I will not. I was, like, biting my lip, like, pinching my thigh and doing all this, you know. And, like, and it wasn't that it was that good a movie, but it very skillfully manipulated your emotions, you know. And what this does it in just such a ham-handed way that, I mean, and the thing is, I believe the first words of my review were, I'm going to kick your dog. Because there are people that are probably going to get this and like it and say, oh, that was so sad.
You got tricked.
I don't know.
You got tricked. Yeah, Band-Aid and Rough Night. Which one of those two are you really passionate about?
Well, Band-Aid is the far better movie. It's about a couple that cannot stop fighting, and they the only way they can is they decide to start a band, and they can sing mean songs to each other, and that works. But it's really
that sounds great.
It's a lot darker than that sounds. So
stick with Band-Aid. Stick with Band-Aid.
Well, I was going to say everybody's going to go see Rough Night, and it's Brad's made raw. There's going to be all these women can act as ridiculous as men movies, I guess. But no, Band-Aid is good, and the woman, and now I can't think of her name, but she stars in it, she wrote it, and she directs it. And they're sort of people that they're stuck in their life, they're kind of in a rut, and all they do is fight. And there's a reason for it, which you find out over the course of the movie. And Fred Armisen plays their truly weird next-door neighbor, but he's a drummer in real life, and he kind of becomes their drummer and gives them, like, a little bit of a, you know, little heft to their music. But it's really interesting. And I think one of the reasons it's interesting is because, yeah, I mean, it's sort of a fanciful notion that this is what they can do. But the fights are real. And they're, like, some of the most realistic and uncomfortably filmed arguments between a couple that I've seen in a long time. And it's sort of, ugh. But if they kind of turn those into lyrics, it kind of works out for him.
Oh, I see.
And the question is, you know, can you really sustain that? Is that really the basis of a healthy relationship? You know, and you get to find that out too. But it's intriguing. I mean, you know, it's not. It's sort of the very definition of a small film, but I liked it.
All right, and that's showing at Valley Art, from what I've
yes.
seen.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
And I love Valley Art. I think that's a good reason to get into Valley Art and see it. I mean, Valley Art's a good old time movie theater. And there aren't hardly any left. So.
Before I get you out of here, so my son knew that you were coming on today, and he wanted to know what you thought of Cars 3, and I don't have time other than 5 seconds. Am I going to pull my head out if I go to this?
I didn't see it, but they got too busy, but other people saw it and say it's way better than the second one, kind of gets them back on track.
All right. All right. Well, then I'll tell him that, and he can go by himself. He's at that age. Thank you, Bill. See you later. I'll see you next week. And Happy Father's Day. It's like that. It's my Happy Father's Day. Here, go see the movie. There's not a chance. I'm going into Cars. See you later.
Bye.
There's Goody at the movies. Yeah, I'm going to win Father of the Year, all right? So Father's Day. Think about this, guys. Fathers and sports are intertwined. You've probably been to a baseball game with your dad. You've probably sat at a sporting event with your dad. Somewhere along the way in life, those of you that have been fortunate enough to have dads or granddads that raised you, sports was a common link that brought you guys together. So go think about, go write down, you know, go write 300 words to dad about the sporting event you were at where things really changed your life. Just go do it. Because I do this show every year where I put people on. I'm not doing it this year because I'm taking some time, but put people on the air, and they all think back to a day that they were with dad and how that made a real difference with them. And I think dad would appreciate it. So there you go. Edwin Rodriguez and Jared Nielsen, overseen by Jared Nielsen, Edwin Rodriguez, co-chairmen of the board today. Jordan Hamm in producing today. Eric is off. Haley, a part of helping behind the scenes, as always. And, of course, thanks to you. Thanks to our sponsors. I'm Brad Sussmat. Thanks for being with us.